Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Yahoo Sports Hockey Podcast, Justin Cuthbert and Julian McKenzie. For the first Sunday of the regular season, the NHL season is underway. We are coming at you every week, and we are so excited to have Julian on every week, even though, man, there's a lot of things, a lot of check just boxes to check on your week, dude. I mean, I'm glad we locked you in early.
Yeah, you guys had the foresight, I guess. But, man, I wouldn't miss it for the world, man. Weekly chats with the homie. Justin Cuthbert, another one of us who's had the opportunity to host a radio show on Sportsnet Fan 590 in Toronto. We both have that in common now. So, yeah, I wouldn't miss it for the world to host. To be on these shows with you, my man.
Oh, we had you on because they wanted to make me feel comfortable. And comfortable, I felt, with Julian McKenzie on last week. But let's talk about
this show. I appreciate
that. And what's going on with the Yahoo Sports Hockey Podcast. Busy first 4 or 5 days, like a lot of stuff that we can get into. And I think we got to start with ESPN and TNT. Obviously, it was the big rollout for these now competing networks in the United States. Unfortunately, we don't get to see all of it. And I had to like send a message to a PR guy to be like, hey, can I watch that pregame show with Charles Barkley? I'd really like to see it because I don't know if we're going to be able to get to see a lot of what they do because, you know, the NHL package is what it is, and it kind of just starts when the game starts, and you don't get the pregame, but that's okay. We'll find a way to get Chuck in our life, and we'll find a way to get both the ESPN and TNT panels into our lives, and we'll see more and more of it, I'm sure. But from what you saw from these two networks, what were your first impressions?
First off, I didn't even know that was a possibility where you could reach out to their PR people to get that sort of thing. I should have probably done that because in order to watch anything interesting from both panels from ESPN and TNT, you pretty much have to wait until any of their clips come up on social media. So all the funny Charles Barkley stuff where he looks at Wayne Gretzky and he's like, you got beat up by a guy with a perm, which is absolutely hilarious. We had to wait until social media surfaced that clip and started sharing that around. And I thought that was hilarious. I mean, just off of what I saw from ESPN's presentation and TNT's presentation, ESPN is going into this thinking, hey, we're ESPN. You already know who we are. You already know our standards for how we present sports. That's how we're going to do it for the National Hockey League. And already with the commentary teams that they have, they had that standard upheld. I'll say this for Sean McDonough and Ray Ferraro. They're both really professional broadcasters, obviously. I think in their first game, Pittsburgh-Tampa Bay, they might have been a little bit tentative. John Buchegrass, however, Brian Boucher, and I think AJ Molesko in the Seattle Kraken Vegas game, that was amazing. And I think the game, the way that game went, that also kind of helped with some of the nerves. If you're going through an exciting game, you want to match that intensity, and we'll get to Seattle later. But I was really amped to hear these teams go at it in terms of calling the game and the way the game was presented. Whereas with TNT, I think because of the formula that they had for basketball games, especially with their intermission panels where they're able to just do fun stuff. And I think they just tried to replicate that with Liam McHugh and Wayne Gretzky. And of course, the inclusion of Charles Barkley as well. Anything's going to be fun when you have Chuck in there. I love him trying to wear goalie equipment and seeing him take shots for Wayne Gretzky. That's fun. It seems as if like maybe it's a bit of an early judgment, but TNT is going to try to be the more fun one. But that doesn't make ESPN's presentation any less.
Yeah, I mean, I think both brands sort of stuck to their identities, which I really, really liked. If you told me that beforehand, though, I would have been like, wow, TNT. I mean, I don't know if you should be going that route, but I actually think they were really, really effective in what they were trying to do, which was just to simply have fun. And it was very deliberate and it was very smart on their behalf to get Charles in there because he's a friend of Wayne Gretzky's. He's going to be natural and fun on camera regardless of who he's with. And it worked really, really, really well. I mean, you mentioned the perm. I mean, I think one of the things that worked the best from TNT was the fact that they really tried to humanize Gretzky right off the bat. Now, there was a lot at the start. It was like, deferring to Gretzky. But once Barkley got on there, everyone just started making fun of Wayne Gretzky. And for that show to work, he has to be like Shaq or Chuck. And he has to be somewhat self-deprecating. And I was worried when they had him on. It's like, who's ever going to step to Wayne Gretzky? But when you got Charles Barkley there and he opens that door, everybody else started to walk right through it. Them making fun of Wayne's sweater vest throughout the entire broadcast was very, very funny. And Wayne Gretzky's not going to be like a stand-up comic. He's not going to have those laugh out loud moments. But the fact that they were able to incorporate those, like, you know, just user tweets, stuff that people are talking about, just like they do on Inside the NBA, and people making fun of Bissonnette or making fun of Tockett or whatever, or making fun of Wayne's vest, they sort of had the, you know, those laugh out loud into break moments, which I would have never figured they'd have right off the bat.
And if they keep doing that, then we're going to see way more moments, whether you have to talk to TNT's PR person to get them, or on social media, where we're going to see them just have a grand old time. And it looks as if they have the right chemistry with some of the guys that they have. And, you know, also shout out to their play-by-play teams as well. I don't remember them all off the bat, but I know Kenny Albert's doing some stuff with them as well. They have a pretty solid team covering the NHL. And I'll give them props for this. Between them and ESPN, they have the better score bug. Like, I love the design, and they have a shot counter. And I don't mean to go inside baseball. The score bug, obviously the scoreboard, which you see on TV. We've been spoiled over the last few years watching games and knowing how many shots are given between each side. Like, I don't think you could do what ESPN is doing right now and have a game where you're like, okay, well, we know what the score is, but I have no clue if, like, you know, this team is up 2-0, those are the only two shots they've had all game. I know they tried to show the shots at different points and they hide it, like, not too long after, but, like, nah, keep it up. Keep it up there, because I think in this day and age of information, the more we're able to know during a game, the better. Obviously, you have to do it in some sleek ways where it's not, you know, taking up the entirety of the screen, but ESPN shouldn't stray away from showing us more and more information and letting it stay there. And TNT, at least from what I've seen so far, they've been willing to do that.
Speaking of sleek, we won't get into Sportsnet's changes if there are, well, there are a couple changes, but their new graphics, beautiful. And the guys that are, like, they're all wearing, like, beautiful suits now. Like, they just decided to be really stylish. You know, there's one guy in the play-by-play booth who's not stylish at all, but we'll just see if he ever comes around on that.
He didn't take any tips from you.
Oh, I definitely don't have it either. He's got to hook up with Sean McKenzie. That's probably the only chance. Anyway,
no relation, TNT, by the way.
No relation. Not at all. Neither to Bob, right?
No. He's my brother. He's apparently brother from another mother, but that's as far as it goes, apparently.
Okay. I mean, maybe he can welcome you into the family at any point, but we'll see if we ever get there.
I think so. Anyway, sorry for cutting you off.
No, it's all good. TNT, I'll just try to, like, tie up my thoughts and we can move over to ESPN a little bit. I know we've been jumping around here, but you mentioned the end game. Very professional, right? It's like, it's NBC retreads. I don't mean retread in too negative a tone, but it's just professional broadcasters that can stand in and give you a good call of the game, which is exactly what they have for NBA, where it's two sort of different feels. It's a very professional broadcast, and then it's hijinks in the panel. And I think that sort of gives you a best of both worlds scenario, because I don't really want silliness during the game, but I do welcome it into the intermissions. For ESPN, you know, the panel didn't stand out as much. I am, like, a little reluctant to be a media critic, even though I acted like one writing this week. But their panel, certainly not as strong. But the game, I think it's in safe hands, because, you know, when you got Ray Ferraro, when you've got someone as quality as Sean McDonough, you're going to figure it out. Sean McDonough, it wasn't it wasn't the best first game, but I think that had a lot to do with the fact that it was a terrible game. And it's hard to call your first hockey game in a long time when you're used to doing college football in front of raucous audiences, and all of a sudden it's a stinker between the Lightning and Penguins. So you have to give them a little bit of room to grow into that. But as you mentioned, I think you mentioned, or I've heard you say it before, John Bojigras on the second game was so entertaining. If we're going to do late night doubleheaders, it had almost a late night feel. It was a bit different, right? It was a little off the cuff, and his calls were tremendous. And I thought that broadcast in particular was very, very good. But the ESPN standard, that's what I noticed the most. Were they going to live up to the standard with hockey? Are they going to put all the investment in? And I think we saw that with Justin Bieber telling the story of the NHL on ESPN theme right away. I mean, that is high profile stuff. And that's what we need hockey to have more of. That was the sort of perfect introduction for me.
I'll just say this about the NHL on ESPN song. It is highly underrated. Like, I know we have the music for Sportsnet and TSN has the, you know, but like the NHL on ESPN theme, criminally underrated. I didn't realize how much I missed it until they started playing it over and over and over. I don't know if you ever played the NHL 2K games when they were under the ESPN branding in like the early 2000s. They were like inferior, obviously, to the NHL EA Sports games. But the NHL 2K games, the music would just play over and over and over. And you're like, you know what? This is actually a good song. So, yeah, the presentation and the standard from them, I mean, it's going to be there. I'm trying to think. You're right. The panelists didn't necessarily stand out as much. I am still kind of surprised that John Tortorella, I understand, you know, he's not really in a job right now, but he ended up there. I kind of thought he was going to swear off doing media stuff after the whole TSN experiment from a few years ago. But maybe it's because he doesn't have to worry about doing the quiz. That's why he signed on with ESPN. But he's looked as if he's been great. And I know we'll touch up on this later, but when they were talking about Matisse Kivalex, from the now deceased former goaltender for the Columbus Blue Jackets, seeing his emotion with Emily Kaplan and John Buchegras, that was a really touching moment. And it was good for them to approach that matter in the way that they did. And that was really, you know, obviously it's sad what happened, but it was really cool to see genuine emotion from those panelists when they were tackling that subject. I know that was later in the week, but it's good to see that the standard from ESPN is what it is with the National Hockey League. And it's going to be good to see. The only thing we're missing now is Stephen A. Smith crashing the panel every now and now and again, and seeing if he could provide some perspective on, I don't know, see a Chicago Blackhawks game or another prominent U.S. franchise like that. I think when it gets to that point where Stephen A. Smith just like crashes the set and he starts giving up some point about how like Austin Matthews hasn't scored in 3-4 games. What is this brother doing? Like that's what it's going to really get interesting for me.
Yeah, I think there's room to up the entertainment value on the ESPN side with their like panelists and with their commentators. And I think Stephen A. stepping in would provide a lot of that. I'm glad you mentioned Emily Kaplan, because I think that's one of the more innovative things that they're trying to do over there with having, you know, a sort of prototypical sideline reporter, in that they're not talking between whistles. They're being brought in to give you some offbeat color, whether it's, you know, it's not the stuff that we're seeing on the ice, but it's what may be happening on the sidelines or behind the scenes. And I think that's very, very interesting, because it's not, you know, splitting the atom by any stretch of the imagination, but it's not something we normally see in hockey. And I think, you know, we saw her write about, you know, it was the exact story that came into my head when you think about the ESPN being on or the NHL being on ESPN was, okay, let's profile Austin Matthews. That seemed like a layup at the time. But if they're doing a Leaf game and she just wrote about Austin Matthews, and you can provide one of those nuggets that's from the story or from your conversations with him, instead of, hey, this is how Matthews created that goal with a forecheck. Like if you give us something that's off the ice in those moments, I think that could work very, very well. And then they don't try to repeat that with the second broadcast. It's just AJ Molesko between the benches doing that typical between the bench stuff where she's, you know, coming in between every whistle and discussing the game very actively with that team. I think it's cool how they just put people in position to succeed and to profile someone like Kaplan, who's obviously their top NHL insider.
Yeah, you bring up a really good point. They're playing to their strengths there. Instead of having Emily Kaplan try to be AJ Molesko or any other normal analyst that they would have, well, quote unquote, normal analyst that they would have between the boards, play to her strengths. She's a reporter and she's very good at being on camera. So the fact that she's able to provide that perspective, I think that's going to be a welcome addition for ESPN broadcast going forward. Big up to Emily Kaplan. She's been having a pretty big year with all the stuff she's been doing with ESPN. She's appearing on Around the Horn as well. Like, Emily Kaplan's having herself a really good 2021.
She even hosts a Chelsea FC official podcast. So if there's anyone competing for you in terms of like breadth of job, it might be Emily, it might be Emily Kaplan.
She has a podcast with Linda Cohn too, or is that just Linda Cohn's podcast?
Yeah, I believe they're both on it together. Yeah, it's the ESPN's NHL podcast, I believe. Another hockey podcast to compete with Julian. It's tough.
Jesus, man. Like, it's just the market is so saturated. It's crazy.
It's pretty crazy. It's pretty crazy. Okay, so part of that, ESPN release and the new broadcasters was the Seattle Kraken's first game. They were in Vegas. They lost in Vegas in their first ever game. They followed that up with a win against the Nashville Predators in Nashville. We're still waiting for the Seattle Kraken's home debut. And then over the weekend, most recently, they lost in overtime to the Columbus Blue Jackets. So 3 points through three games. They sort of seen it all to start. I mean, the most difficult barn to play in probably on opening night, Vegas. They saw a kicked in puck. You know, so the rules, I mean, come against them. So the rules are already a little confusing. And we know that there's quite a few primers out there being written. So already those primers are a little bit confusing. But that's only natural in the NHL. So a loss in Vegas, a win in Nashville, obviously an important moment for the franchise. And Nashville took the opportunity to raise another banner to the rafters. And then, of course, they finally got into overtime and suffered a loss. So lots happened with the Seattle Kraken. What stands out to you?
The fact that I'm not completely surprised that they have the results that they have. I think we've talked about how the division, it's been said before that the division that they're in isn't necessarily going to be as competitive as, you know, the Atlantic division or even the Metropolitan division, or even the Central for that matter. So the fact that they're able to get the points that they're able to get, I think they're going to put themselves in a decent position going forward. Morgan Geeky is a guy I'm still thinking of because of that shot that he had in that opening night game against the Vegas Golden Knights. He takes the puck up the wing and beats Robin Leonard. I still don't know where that puck went. And John Buchegras is saying, holy shnikey. I thought he was going to say, holy shit. But I realized I did not watch the movie Tommy Boy, so I had no clue where the reference was. But that was an incredible shot. And I think one thing we're going to realize from these Seattle Kraken players, pretty much like what we did with the Vegas Golden Knights, is we're going to see a lot of guys on this team who we were like, I have no clue who this guy is. And then you're going to realize, oh, hey, wait a minute. That's why they were taken in the expansion draft, because Morgan Geeky all of a sudden is a guy that I'm thinking of. And I'm like, OK, like, I did not know this guy had this crazy of a shot, and he's out here killing it in these games.
Yeah, I mean, I think overall 3 points from three games, that's sort of probably what we'd expect. I know the line or the expected total was like 92.5 or something, and that's potentially playoffs. That's playoff bubble. But, you know, an 82-point season, it may not be out of the realm of possibility. They're probably going to do a little bit better than that based on how they've performed and how they can grow into their role, but role in the league. But I just feel like, yeah, this is sort of the team. It's going to be win one, lose one. It's going to be have good nights where that talent is showcased and other nights where it's going to be more difficult when you run into a very good team. I think a performance against Vegas in which they fell behind 3-0 and found their way back into that game before eventually losing before regulation was up. I mean, that's just a quality performance and a good start and something that that fans can at least dig into and believe a little bit in their team following that up with a win. You know, this team is three games on the road and it's shown out pretty well. I think one thing that stands out to me is that their best two players so far, Brandon Tanev and Jared McCann, I think, were Penguins last year. So that makes Pittsburgh start without Malkin and Crosby, and those two players a little bit more impressive. But yeah, I just think this is probably as expected an average team. I think some people would say, yeah, they were going to go to the playoffs. They were going to compete for the Pacific Division. Others thinking they were terrible. It's definitely something in between. The one thing for me is the goaltending. Like, we've seen Grubauer 3 straight games. I think I'm going to complain about goaltending with Seattle all season long because, I mean, I think they had the guy in Chris Drieger, and then you kept him on the bench for the first 3 games, and we've only had, like, what, 5 nights of the season? So they're playing every other night. Like, could probably mix in a little Drieger on the road, because I think Philip Grubauer might just be like the team and might just be sort of an average goaltender who was the benefit of playing in Colorado last year. But we'll see what happens.
Yeah, but just the fact that if you have Chris Drieger, who we all saw what he did in Florida, he was pretty decent, and Philip Grubauer is Philip Grubauer. Like, Seattle, if they really run those goalies right, you have yourself a really good 1A, 1B tandem in that. So, yeah, that is strange that they would have Philip Grubauer go for all those games. I can't imagine what Chris Drieger is feeling. I mean, you know what? I'm not him, but I would have thought if I was him, I would be going into this year being, you know what, I'm the starter. And then Philip Grubauer comes in and you're like, wait a minute. I thought I was going to get it. I mean, even the money he was getting, you'd think, okay, well, that's not a bad money for a starter in the National Hockey League. And now he's found himself in a position where he's going to be riding pine to another goaltender, a capable goaltender in Philip Grubauer. But it'd be cool to see Seattle kind of run those two goalies back and forth. And that might actually help their cause going forward. But sometimes I get it. Some teams like the consistency of having one guy to think of as opposed to two. But they have two really capable goaltenders that they could probably run.
Yeah, and if you're Drieger, I mean, you sign, a 3-year extension or a 3-year contract when you got to Seattle, and then they sign Grubauer for six, and you're thinking you have your platform, your launch point to having a great career, and now you're pretty clearly not even a 1B. You're a 2 at least to start this year. So we'll see what happens. I think there's room for things to change a little bit there. But I think what we know what we're going to get from Seattle. I think they're going to be a game team, and I think they're going to give people fits. But also, I think their ceiling might be fairly fixed. But maybe it's too early to make those calls. Okay, let's move on to just whatever's top of mind. I wrote down here that I'm going to ask you, are the Habs the worst team in the league after an 0-3 start? So I can let you go on that in terms of what stands out through 4 or 5 nights here in the regular season, but you can take this any way you want. But eventually you're going to have to answer that question if the Habs are the worst team in the league.
Okay. Jeez. They are the Habs the worst team in the league? I mean, they lost to a team that we all thought was going to be the worst team in the league. So yep. You know
the
what?
The 2-0 Buffalo Sabres, though, they might be pretty good.
The best team in the National Hockey League right now is the Buffalo Sabres. That's amazing. And you know what? I'll start off with them, because that game, that first game for them this season, like, where they beat the Montreal Canadiens, they deserve to win that game. They came out and they were like, you know what? We're just going to work hard. We're going to work our butts off. We're going to dominate them as best as we can. And they did it. And like, they looked great. I don't think it's going to be sustainable over 82 games, but if nothing else, like, if you're the, yeah, no way. If you're the,
hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
But yeah, Buffalo Sabres fans, at the very least, and I think Kyle Okpozo had said this, Kyle Okpozo looks good for like the first time in 2-3 years, by the way, or maybe even longer than that. But anyway, Kyle Okpozo was saying that, you know, every night the team is going to try to at least, you know, show effort. And I think with the fans, they know the team doesn't have the pieces to compete. If they get effort, at least it'll make this season salvageable. And if Jack Eichel gets traded, I think that's also a bit more important considering how he has kind of lingered over the franchise. I think Elliot Friedman was saying yesterday that, Colorado was supposed to be involved in a deal, but like the Buffalo showed no interest in retaining salary. So like, This is just a complete mess. You know what I'm saying? Like it's Buffalo right now. It's not fun to be a Sabres fan. So if the games at the very least are somewhat, if the players show effort, if they show something, it could at least be a bit salvageable. And the fact that they've got the two wins in the bank that they have, you know, it for at least one fleeting moment, you can feel good being a Buffalo Sabres fan. I'm thinking of Dwayne, the guy who made that funny phone call about the Sabres, about the knockoff jerseys all those years ago. I think he has a podcast. It feels pretty good to be Dwayne right now.
Yeah, I mean, whatever happens, they'll always have this half week way that where they jumped out to a 2-0 record. I think they have 7 goals for and just 2 against. They're just behind Florida on a technicality just because Florida scored more goals thus far. But both are 2-0 and seated atop the Atlantic Division. Who would have ever thought the Buffalo Sabres would ever be in that position? But, you know, the Montreal-Arizona start was at least somewhat favorable. In terms of things that stand out for me, you know, the New York Islanders being 0-2, minus 7 goal differential. They lost to two good teams in Florida and Carolina, but still unexpected. And I don't think they played till Tuesday, so Barry Trotz is going to have a lot of time to stew over this. I think it's Chicago. They just might blow the absolute doors off Chicago to start next week, and we might see the Islanders get back to being the Islanders. I think the Edmonton Oilers look quite good. I mean, lots of attention, obviously, to those forwards that we always talk about, but it's a really solid forward group. And I think a guy like Derek Ryan, you know, no attention paid to him at all in the offseason, but maybe one of the underrated additions this offseason. He just does a lot of things that no Oiler ever does, which is like play smart defensive hockey and kill penalties and be trusted on in big situations. So I think they made a quality move there. Jack Hughes' stick toss was the best thing I've not just seen this season, but perhaps ever. That was awesome and something amazing. You definitely need more of. It's just one win over Chicago, but New Jersey looks like it could have potential, if not just be very, very exciting. And Jack Hughes may be primed for a big breakout season. But the number one thing for me is like, what's going on with the Winnipeg Jets? It's only two games and two losses in California to Anaheim and San Jose. Penalty killing just getting torched. I mean, this is a Hellebuck looking shaky. This is a team that I had a lot of, you know, hope for. I believe they could potentially go to, you know, an Eastern or a Western Conference final, really compete this year. And that's still possible, obviously, but they've looked really shaky out of the gate. And I'm kind of unsure why. Mark Scheifele obviously missing the first game with suspension, but this team you'd think would have been just bursting at the seams to get going. And it's just been a really tough start for them.
I just want to say about the Winnipeg Jets core, like if they don't do it this year, like I don't know if I could believe in this team anymore. I think they have the great crop of forwards. They improved their defense this year. They should have the best goaltender in the league in Connor Hellebuck. And this is a team that it's not as if they're trying to make playoff runs like happen for them. They've been to the playoffs before. It's the standard in Winnipeg right now with the core that they have. If they can't find a way to at least get to the third round this year, I'm not sure how much I can truly believe in this team anymore. That's just maybe it's just a bit of a reactionary take. And I understand it's really early in the year, but the Winnipeg Jets and the talent that they have, this should be a team that should be able to go far this year. They no excuses this year.
Yeah, definitely. And I'm just you'd think there'd be that urgency, right? You'd think that'd be the urgency right of the get. Two gettable teams at Anaheim and San Jose. Maybe they are better than I or others are giving them credit for, but still just not the start that we probably envisioned. You have avoided it to this point, but let's get a little bit of a deep dive, your opinion on Montreal before we move on to the Charlie McAvoy and Brady Tkachuk contracts.
They do not look good. Their defense looks slow. Their opponents have found ways to neutralize some of their better forwards, and particularly on the power play, which they still do not have a power play goal to this point. The Canadiens do not look good. I know it's three games, but they do not look good. One stat that has been burning in my head all week from my colleague Arpin Basu, I think only like 15 teams or a number of teams have started the year 0-3 over the last five seasons, and only four of them have made the playoffs, and two of them were Chicago and Minnesota, who made the playoffs thanks to the pandemic. Like, it's pretty dire. I mean, maybe it's a bit maybe it's a bit much to say it's dire, but I think if you've watched all three of these Canadiens games to this point, three goals in one in each of those games, two of them coming from Jonathan Drouin, who, good on him. I still think he'll be the good feel good story of the year because of the fact he's been able to play in light of all the anxiety issues that he's been dealing with. But nothing from Nick Suzuki, nothing from Cole Caulfield. Mike Hoffman's still not in the lineup yet. There's a lot left to be desired for the Montreal Canadiens. They do not look good to start off. And that Buffalo Sabres loss, I think, might be one of the more embarrassing performances this team has put on in quite some time. They've shown that they have tried their absolute best to play up to competition, but when it comes to teams that are supposed to be lesser than them, they just, I don't know what it is. They play down and they lose to that competition. It's been happening for the last few years, and it's come back again. Like, this Canadiens team, through three games, they definitely look like among the worst teams in the National Hockey League. It is three games, but it doesn't look good.
Yeah, I mean, we discussed expectations with Winnipeg and how they might approach this season. You know, maybe there's naturally a bit of a letdown after going to the Stanley Cup final and not winning it. We see teams that go to the Stanley Cup final return the next season and do not, you know, meet expectations or even come close to having the same success. But you'd think with things that have happened with Carey Price, you know, Shea Weber leaving, that there might be some, you know, groundswell of, okay, let's step up here. We have to step up because we're missing these guys and we need to be better if we're going to have success this season. And I don't know if that inspiration or ambition has been shown so far.
I'll say this. I think because of the fact that those two guys are gone and Phil Deneau as well, I don't know if they're really able to play that same style that worked for them in the playoffs as well, or just they're being exposed, I guess. It's just, and that's not to say Jake Allen hasn't played well. I think he's played just fine in the two of the three games that the team has played so far. Shea Weber, I think the fact that teams are able to kind of have their way in the blue paint, like he would definitely be needed. But even at that, like, this defense has needed to become more mobile. Jeff Petrie and David Savard are way too slow out there, and they're constantly getting burned by opposing players. They needed some more reinforcements at the back end, and even some of their younger guys like Alexander Romanov, who last year, like in his first season at the beginning of the year, a lot of people were looking at him and saying, hey, you know what? He has the tools. He could be it. He's been shaky to start off the year. I think the defense has been the weakest point for this Montreal Canadiens team. And I think the fact that even though having Carey Price would make a bit of a difference, even if they kept Philip Deneau, it would make a bit of a difference. I think keeping Corey Perry would have also made a bit of a difference as well. I think there are just some other flaws in this team that Mark Bergevin should have probably addressed to this point to ensure that they wouldn't have an 0-3 start. But then again, it is only three games.
Yeah, it's only three games, but this is a big week coming up for Montreal. You'd know better than me who they have on the schedule. But you know, falling behind five games very quickly, five, six games in this division. I mean, we saw Tampa look shaky off the bat. They've responded with two wins. Florida looks like the team that we expect, and Toronto hasn't looked that good. They've been without Austin Matthews, but they have two wins from three games, and Boston won its opener. So things are going to get competitive quick. Even Detroit looks like it wants to be a competitive team this year. And we have mentioned that Buffalo's 2-0, but probably don't have to worry too much about Buffalo. Two major contracts signed in the lead up to the season, or as the season has begun. Two big extensions for very, very important players for their organizations, and they both happen to play in the Atlantic Division as well. Charlie McAvoy, I believe it was 8 years, $9.5 million, a huge, huge deal, and really kind of the going rate for elite defensemen in the NHL nowadays, which it's kind of inflated. It seems like it's too much for all these guys, but certainly McAvoy belongs in that category. And then Brady Tkachuk, right before the opener for the Ottawa Senators, signed, I believe, 7 years for just over $8 million. He missed the first two games for the Ottawa Senators, but he's going to be back very, very soon and doing Brady Tkachuk things. So you can start with McAvoy. What do you think about that deal and what it means for the Boston Bruins?
Yeah, I'm with you on the fact that it's going along the going rate for elite defensemen of their caliber. We've seen what guys like Dougie Hamilton and Seth Jones have gotten in this league. So I'm not surprised that Charlie McAvoy signed for the deal that he did. And Boston puts itself in a situation where they don't have to worry about him going forward. He's going to be a Boston Bruin for the foreseeable future. And yeah, for a guy like him of his caliber, what he's able to do, like I like the deal for them. And I like the deal for him as well. I don't think it was a bad move. I have questions about the Brady Tkachuk move, however. I still think, because with the way power forwards work and the style of play, I know he's going to be a really solid player for them going forward. You just have to hope that he doesn't get too banged up and it doesn't end up being a complete overpay for a guy who might not be able to play every game. But he's definitely someone who the Ottawa Senators need in their lineup. If it got to a point where we're going into November, there's no deal signed, that would be a world of trouble for him and the Ottawa Senators. Well, mostly the Ottawa Senators, I think. Yeah. He's one of the better players on this team, if not their best player. So it was important for them to be re-signed. I'm a bit more hesitant at the number, but it's one of, because of the way the franchise is set up, the Ottawa Senators kind of had to give him that money.
Yeah, he's a strange one, and I'm not really, you know, not really surprised why it got to this point, because Brady Tkachuk doesn't really have comparables in the NHL. I mean, this is a guy who doesn't score at a very high rate. I mean, I don't think he's had in excess of 50 points yet. If we look back at the last two seasons, which are short, and I think he'd probably get over that mark. But this isn't a guy who scores at an $8 million level, if you want to put it that way. But he also does things that are just way beyond that. I mean, he's second in shots in the league last year, but also second in hits. And he really is the heartbeat of that team. Like, he is the glue for that entire organization, it seems. So having him in the lineup for the next 7 years is unbelievably important for them. I mean, they couldn't get to the point where they signed a 3-year deal and then just walked him into a scenario in which he could leave. I mean, I'm not sure if my math is perfect there, but like, you need to find a way to keep him for the long term. And I think they did that with this deal. And I think he's going to grow into a more consistent scorer, because we already know he's a force on the ice, but to earn that money, you got to put the puck in the net with regularity. And I think he will be doing that soon enough. With McAvoy, I found this one to be very, very interesting. I mean, on the surface, it is pretty basic. An elite number one defenseman, or an elite young up-and-coming number one defenseman, they make $9.5 million. But it's interesting that he was compared only to others in his category and not to players on his own team. I mean, what's been so special about Boston, how they've been able to be so competitive for so long, is that they have their own internal pay structure. I mean, you don't make more than Patrice Bergeron, because Brad Marchand and Pasternak, they just agree to shuffle in. And he just blew all the numbers out of the water. I mean, it's $6 million, under $7 million for Bergeron, and close to that for the other two perfection line forwards. I mean, this is $3 million more almost than pretty much everybody else is making on that team, which is pretty remarkable considering that, to a lesser extent, Marchand, but Pasternak just fell in line and took what he could get. And I'm sure that there wasn't much of a negotiation. It seems like it got done pretty easily, but maybe that speaks to the importance of McAvoy. Maybe it speaks to things that are changing in Boston, with maybe Patrice Bergeron, who was non-committal about next season, maybe moving on, and everything's going to change in Boston with this deal, because what worked so well was keeping everyone underpaid, and now they've set a completely new bar here with Charlie McAvoy.
I didn't even think about that idea. I didn't realize that Charlie McAvoy's salary was going to be way above what
the over two and a half million more than.
That's really interesting. And I mean, it's one thing for Patrice Bergeron, who's at the latter stages of his career, but I wonder what a guy like Brad Marchand or a guy like David Pastrnak, who's one of the best goal scorers in the National Hockey League, might be thinking at that. And I get their different positions, different players, but David Pastrnak should be making quite a bit of money in the National Hockey League.
Definitely. He definitely should. I mean, the Brad Marchand, I mean, we mentioned Bergeron, he's up next season. I think Marchand still got 4 years. What a contract that was. I think at about around 6.5, and Pasternak comes up in 2 years. So he did give himself an opportunity to probably sign a contract at the peak of his playing ability. And he'll probably be up around 9.5. But again, then they get into problems, right? When you have multiple players at $9.5-$10 million, you're going to get into Toronto Maple Leaf territory, where they're bringing up Alex Bishop because they can't do anything. Or Alex Bishop being the University U Sports goalie for the University of Toronto, bringing him up in an emergency because Justin Hall had the sniffles and there's injuries and they are so tightly bunched against the cap that these situations happen. I'll just open the floor to you on that. What do you think of that situation? Is it still cute for you? I mean, it's a gift to Toronto. It's a gift to Toronto reporters who have the opportunity to write that story. You probably only get that once a year, but like, I'm kind of getting tired of this. It's Mickey Mouse stuff. And the league needs to find a solution for like emergency roster movement. I mean, I get there's some provisions in place, and the provision was to get him up on an emergency basis, but like, we need to find something better than this, because eventually it's just not going to be cute, and it's going to be like a 15-2 game, and some kid who's writing a midterm next week is going to get embarrassed, and that's going to be his legacy. Not that he got to take warm up with the Leafs, but because Jack Campbell got hurt and he got absolutely owned by the Ottawa Senators. Like, eventually, less Mickey Mouse, more real deal for me.
Well, like, then who do you get then? Do you say, okay, like,
well, Hutchinson should have just been able to come up.
Okay. Like fine.
Whoever it was. I mean, there might be a situation where you don't have a backup and your team plays 5 hours away and you can't get them there. I get that. But yeah.
Because you're only so much, right?
Maybe teams should be able to just carry three goaltenders.
Maybe that could be an idea as well. I mean, I think of like what Montreal was going through on Saturday. Their AHL team was playing in Belleville the same night. Like if they were in a situation where they couldn't have an extra goalie, I mean, their goalies would be how many hours away in Belleville, for example, right? Like that might complicate a few things. I think I don't necessarily have a problem with the e-bug being the way that it is. If it gets to a point where the guy goes in, then I mean, we'll just have to deal with the consequences then. And from what we've seen so far between Scott Foster and David Ayers, it hasn't gone totally disastrous for the emergency goaltender. So maybe it's more, maybe I'm not being as preventative as I am, as I could be, but I don't necessarily think it's the biggest deal or the end of the world. I don't know if it's cute either. It's kind of just like funny, I guess, but I don't know. It's a cool story for a guy like Alex Bishop. You know, he gets to ride pine for the Toronto Maple Leafs and live the life of an NHLer for a night. Like there's some fun to that. Like it's cool. It's pretty nice to see. I'm trying to remember which league. I think it's the MLS that has like some kind of like pool of like emergency goaltenders just in case. Maybe the NHL should invest in that too. You just get guys, you know, U Sports guys or ECHL guys who might not be playing that night. You just have them there and you have them in some kind of like different locations, I guess, where you're able to tap into them whenever you need. And maybe they could be just higher grade than just like a U Sports goalie being signed on an ATO. But I don't know. I mean, I don't think it's that big of a deal.
I think that is the system now because Bishop said exactly. That he could have been David Ayers if it was a couple nights later, like the rotation works out that he was supposed to be there. And I guess that makes sense. I mean, it's a local goalie, plays, you know, a decent level of hockey in the area. It all makes sense, but I guess maybe it's just they should have three goalies on every NHL team because the position is too important and injuries happen. And they already both, like you have 20 forwards, but a ton of forwards at your disposal. You can deal with 3, 4, 5 injuries in a game and it won't really affect you that much. But one goaltender injury, and then it's all of a sudden it's panic because if something else happens, you need to get someone for the rafters to come down to dress so that they have the opportunity to play. Maybe I'm just a little bit bitter still at the David Ayers late night circuit, which I thought was just absolutely ridiculous.
You were bitter at that? I still think it's. I just thought it was really fun.
It was the worst moment of the season for the team that cuts your checks.
Yes.
This team pays you to clean the ice, to go on the ice when you know they're down a goalie for practice. They pay you, and you are rubbing it in their face on Stephen Colbert and whatever and James Corden.
Come on, you wouldn't do the same thing.
I mean. It was the worst moment of the season for the team.
Was he really rubbing it in, though? Like, he was, like, from what I saw from David Ayers, he's just standing there. He's like, you know, this was kind of a weird moment. This was awesome for me. Like, I understand that, like, okay, he works for the organization and all that. But
yeah.
Here's something else I'll bring up, too. You don't think that Toronto would have stepped in and be like, hey, look, you're embarrassing us right now. Like,
I'm surprised they didn't. I'm honestly surprised they didn't.
I mean, yeah, but like David Ayers, it was a great moment for him. It's fun, and it can be turned into a movie now, which I think it is.
Exactly. If the Leafs said to me, if after I did that, and I was in, I'd be like, okay, I won't clean your ice anymore, and I'll just sell my script to whatever you know
Disney.
Movie.
Like I don't care.
I get that, but like it was just like it was so bad for. It's such a bad look on the organization, and then the guy who cleans the ice is just. You know, using it to monetizing every last second of it. I thought it was a bit of a strange situation.
Hold on a second. You're an organization who pays Mitch Marner almost $11 million. Were you mad at the guy who beat him on an ATO? I think some of that anger, that bitterness is misplaced. You know what I'm saying? Like, I think that's misplaced.
No doubt. But when there's a book written about the failures of this regime, David Ayers will have a chapter in it. David Ayers will have a chapter in it. It won't be cute then. We use the word cute. It will not be cute then for Maple Leaf fans who are probably a little bit sick of the name David Ayers, if we're being honest. But the late night circuit has dried up. He's not as hot a commodity, and maybe Alex Bishop has that in his future one day. Okay, let's get to the tire pumps. We are flying through this episode. I guess it should be a little bit under an hour, and we're going to be just a little bit under an hour. I know you have trouble with timing on your show, so we're doing the best we can here. Julian, get the pump out. Who you got?
Okay. I don't have to do that. I want to give my tire pump to Alexander Ovechkin. This year, for whatever reason, we have totally magnified his goal scoring chase with history as he seeks to be the all time leading goal scorer for the National Hockey League. And he's already off to a good start, 3 goals in 2 games. And he's not too far off from passing Brett Hall to be fourth all time. If he really plays his cards right, he could end the season third behind Gordie Howe and Wayne Gretzky. Alexander Ovechkin, as far as I'm concerned, if I'm a member of the Washington Capitals, I'm doing everything in my power to ensure that he gets that goal scoring record. I am feeding him pucks. I'm giving him any typical, like if I'm a defenseman, I'm just stretch passing it to him. Just everyone in that locker room, their goal, it should be to ensure that Alexander Ovechkin is in a position to break that goal scoring record. I can go in on all the different coaches that he's had in the past that have slowed his progress towards that mighty record, the Adam Oates of the world, the Dale Hunters of the world, but we don't need to do that here on the Yahoo Sports Hockey Podcast. Alexander Ovechkin is in a position where he can succeed, and he's still able to score goals, especially from that Ovechkin spot. Like, it's the record. That's what I think should be the big story here. And, I mean, it'll still take him a little bit of time for him to get it, but I'm really glad that he still got it, and he's still putting himself in a position where he could do it. So he gets the tire pump for me this week.
Was it a power play and a shorthanded goal in the opener? I believe. Anyway, he's scoring all different ways, and he's going to continue scoring from that power play spot. I don't think you have to bemoan previous coaches because he's going to get there. He's going to break Gretzky's record. And what's really cool, and we didn't talk about it when we went through ESPN and TNT, is that Wayne Gretzky is going to be there the entire time that this happens. It's going to happen in the next 4 or 5 years. Wayne Gretzky, we think, is going to be on the panel for the next few years at least. Maybe he gets to 4, 5, 6 years. And it's going to be cool to track Wayne and Ovechkin through all of this because the Capitals are going to be on TNT a lot. And we're going to have Wayne interviewing Gretzky or Gretzky interviewing Ovechkin, rather, after games like he did in that after that opener where he scored those 2 goals. Like, it's very cool and some tremendous foresight. Not that you'd ever turn down Wayne regardless, but the fact that he's going to be there is such a little carrot for TNT here. It's so cool that he's going to be talking about the record as it's being broken. And I think there's no doubt Ovechkin's going to get there. I don't know how long it's going to take, but he's going to continue to score 40 goals a season until he gets it. And even if it gets down to, you know, he's hobbling on one leg and he's scoring 5, 6, 7 times a season, I think he's going to come back and just keep playing until he gets it, which is going to be fun. Hopefully he's at the peak of his game when he does it. And hopefully Wayne Gretzky's there when it happens as well.
That's going to be really fun to see. Like, Alexander Ovechkin, 41-year-old player, scoring 5, 6 goals in a season. But everyone's all like, score the 7th. It's going to tie the record. Like, please do it. That's going to be really fun to see for one of the premier players of our generation, as far as I'm concerned, in Alexander Ovechkin. I'm rooting for him to get this record. It's just something fun for everyone to watch for the NHL. And we'll be following that over the next few years. It's going to be awesome.
I really want it to be from when he breaks it from the power play, like on ESPN or TNT, like just a big moment, something like everyone will remember. You'll remember where you were when Ovechkin breaks Gretzky's record. And I hope the goal, I mean, we're getting ahead of ourselves, but the goal, you know, matches the moment because it's going to be an incredible moment. As for my tire pump, I mean, my favorite stories seem to be coming out of Columbus, weirdly, where the Blue Jackets are 2-0. I mean, we had Patrick Laine showing off his personality with one of the best arrivals in NHL history. And we're getting arrivals here too with ESPN and TNT, or getting cameras out there waiting for guys to come in, which is another NBA thing. Again, the script for TNT staying the same and working. They didn't have a camera on him, but we still got photos of him coming in with the most legendary getup I've ever seen. And I think he scored the overtime winner in that game as well. He did get that an overtime winner insane. This year. Just unbelievable. Like, Bond villain, Patrick Laine, sign me up.
Yes.
But the best story for Columbus belongs to Elvis Merzlikins, who honored his friend and former goaltending partner, Matthijs Kivlenyks. Tough name, but we got to say it right.
Yeah. I butchered it earlier. My apologies.
I think I got it. We're going to make sure we get that down because he deserves that. He had Merzlikins had a brilliant performance. He's been brilliant this year so far, and a touching tribute for his friend. He called the home opener his most important night And he had 36 saves in that victory. He's got a 948 on the season. I mean, this is a guy we're going to be rooting for, right? I think everyone's going to be rooting for Elvis Merzlikins to have a great year, because this goaltending partner, this colleague, this friend he had meant so much to him, means so much to the Columbus Blue Jackets organization. And him honoring the legacy this year, I don't know if he's going to wear number 80 the entire year. He wore Kip Lennox jersey for warm-up and then used his number for the home opener. I kind of hope he just wears it the entire time. We see the number 80 behind the net in Columbus. This is a year for Kip Lennox for the Columbus Blue Jackets, and I hope that Merzlikins keeps it up, the Blue Jackets keeps it up, and they can celebrate their friend all year long.
I hope so, too. The Kip Lennox story, obviously, being as tragic as it was, it's still really sad to process, for not just for members of the Columbus Blue Jackets organization, but for the entire hockey world. And for Elvis to want to do well for his friend is very touching and very inspiring to see. Elvis, to the point where he told The Athletic straight up, hey, I want to win the Vezina this year. Like, this is clearly the year for him where he wants to be on a mission and, you know, just be one of the best goaltenders in the National Hockey League. So yeah, you're right. We are going to be rooting for him. I think he's going to turn himself into one of the better stories this year. And you can't help but think that you can't help but not root for a guy like Elvis Merzlikins. So yeah, he's very much worthy of a tire pump.
Yeah, definitely. I think there's power in this. There's power in the most important night. I think we're going to see this be the most important season for Elvis Merzlikins and the Columbus Blue Jackets. That's it for today. The first Sunday, the regular season, the Yahoo Sports Hockey Podcast. We flew through some topics. We're gonna might have to add another next week, because I want to make sure everyone gets their hockey fix. But if you follow Julian McKenzie, you do get your hockey fix. You can pump things if you like right now. Beyond who did you tire pump? What terrible memory here.
Yeah,
Alexander Ovechkin is your tire pump. You can pump other things if you'd like, or we can wrap it up. But I know you got a lot that's going on. I know there's a lot to be excited about. So you can share anything you'd like before we sign off.
New Zone Time episode coming out later this week. We record, episodes come out every Wednesday. Chris Johnston show twice a week. So we'll have an episode on Monday. Tweet at Chris Johnston. Pretty sure by the time you see this, the episode might be already out or almost out. But, we got some cool things coming for that show, Mondays and Thursdays. Hockey Inside Out also coming later this week from the Montreal Gazette. And I've got some things planned with The Athletic, got some story ideas percolating, and I got a column that might be making its return later this week for The Athletic. So, this week's actually turning into a pretty busy and pretty big week. So, I'm pretty excited for that. But, always got a day on Sunday for you, JC. I got you. You know I got you Sunday mornings.
I know. Another tease from the great Julian McKenzie. Follow him and follow his work on all the various platforms, and do what he says. Subscribe to the Yahoo Sports Hockey Podcast, to Zone Time on YouTube. We're going to have great hockey content throughout the entire season from myself, from Julian, and our great team here at Yahoo Sports. Julian, until next Sunday.
Peace.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.